morning, everyone. I'm Natalie. I'll be your host for this evening. This is The Conk. If you're just joining us, The Conk is a Gainesville storytelling project put on by Grow Radio. We encourage true 5-minute stories on a topic, and this month's topic is road trips. So if you've got your road trip story, I'll also remind you we have a sign-up sheet at this table here, so please come sign up. And our first storyteller for the evening will be Ray. Are you all right kicking it off?
Ray left.
Oh. I guess I'm stuck then.
You didn't tell my road trip story. Do I really have to hold a microphone? You can't afford a stand?
It's
a lavalier? Dig deep, these people need some money.
Where we can get another stuff.
Welcome him, everyone. Thank you.
I've seen people get electrocuted by these.
So far we have no big power, I guess.
Oh, hey.
Look at that.
Groovy. Got any duct tape?
Professional. I don't even need the duct tape.
Uh-oh.
First, I want to know what happens at 5 minutes. Is there a trap door? I got like a cane.
Everybody has
you have a bouncer.
Those party whistles.
Okay.
Start blowing on those.
All right. Wow. Hi, my name's Ray, and I'm the first one to sign up. So here I am, setting the pace. Okay, road trips. First, I want to give you some marital advice. Especially if there's any guys in the crowd who aren't married yet. If you want a dog, a motorcycle, a muscle car, anything cool like that that costs a little bit of money, get it before you get married. Your chances of getting it afterwards are very slim. So, I met my wife about 22 years ago. And one of the first serious discussions we had was, honey, I got a motorcycle. I like to ride. She's never been on one. I knew this. And I'm like, I'm going. I'm riding. You pretty much have two choices. So we messed around with it for a while. And finally, I was scared of the feedback. Jimmy's not here. We finally had the discussion where she was agreeable, and we went out for probably 3 different rides. And she made me promise not to scare her, so I took it nice and easy. And I think it was the 3rd ride. She leaned forward, tapped me on my helmet, whispered in my ear. It was like foreplay. Does this thing go any faster? Man, the hook was in. Since then, we've ridden together about 80,000 miles, and we have been on some road trips and stories to tell. Some of those trips ended with, I'll never do this again, or I can't feel my ass, you know, that sort of thing. But we kept doing it. I think my favorite trip. We hadn't ventured very far away from Florida, and I don't know why I came up with this idea, but I said, let's go to New Hampshire. So we bought some miniature camping gear that we could pack easily, and it was in June. It was 95 degrees and really humid, you know the routine. And we headed northwest. Toward New Hampshire. I can see it on your face. You're going, they did something wrong. We decided, we had plenty of time, so we decided to take the long way around. And we stayed off the interstates. We rode the Blue Roads, you know about the Blue Roads. And we're having a great old time, eventually headed east. We arrived in Laconia, New Hampshire, very late at night. It was raining and 32. And we had no cold weather gear. Nothing. When we left Florida, it was 95, and we were like, this is going to be great. It's June. How bad can it be? The next day, we just, you know, froze our butts off in our tent that night. The next day, we went around to probably 20 different stores, including stores at ski lodges, looking for cold weather gear. And every place, without exception, we got this look. That's winter clothes. We put those away a month or two ago. Yeah. We were out about 15 days. We rode just shy of about 6,000 miles. We were really honking. But a lot of those days we didn't go anywhere and had a great time. We rode to the top of Mount Washington, which is about 6,500 feet. You know Mount Washington? Dirt road, lots of twisties. It's 1.5 lanes wide, and idiots with RVs go up there. And every road we went around with the bike, it was like, who's going to run us over? There's no guardrail whatsoever. 500 to 1,000 feet straight down. But we made it because my wife told me as we were going up, do not look down. You look straight ahead. And coming down, I had to look down, and I was like, wow, we did this? You know, it's pretty cool. And they gave us a sticker that said, this car drove to the top of Mount Washington. It's okay, we'll put that on anyway. Yeah, good times. And that was the trip when we got back and we unpacked, which we always do immediately for some reason. I don't know why we do what we do. We unpack, get everything settled, getting ready for bed. And I'm like, so what do you think? And she's like, I can't feel my butt. It's gone. It's not there anymore. That's the longest trip we ever took. The most miles and probably the most fun. We'd get up every morning at the campgrounds we were staying at and we would lay out the map, make some coffee and go, where do we want to go today? You know, there was very little in the way of an agenda, and it was so great to just look at the map. No GPS, just look at the old map that's falling apart at the creases and going, let's go there. That looks good. We had a ball. I could talk about it for about an hour, but I'm sure my 5 minutes are about up. Let's see, is there a point to this? Is there a moral to my story? Just that we've really enjoyed that, and it started with her being afraid, never having been on a motorcycle. She has her own now. She's got her license. She's licensed to kill. And we're still putting miles on, sometimes on our separate bikes, sometimes still two up, and it's a wonderful thing. Amen.
Thank you, Ray. My grandparents were, I don't know if they were the crazy RVs going up that mountain, but they had similar, it sounds like, adventures where they would, it was before cell phones, and they'd call my parents and say, well, we're heading north on this road, and we'll call you when we get there. Yeah, when we know where there is. It might have been. So far, Ray is the only one on our list, and he has completed his 5-minute space. So now is the time where, early in the night this time, I beg you to please share your road trip stories. If you're just joining us, I see a couple new faces. This is the Conk. It's true storytelling put on by Grow Radio. And the stories are told by you, the audience members. And we encourage 5 minutes or less on a theme. And this month's theme is road trips.
The Grow Radio web address is on the coaster.
and I think we passed out a couple coasters tonight, and the Grow Radio website is posted on, or listed on those. It's www.growradio.org. This podcast will be posted there later. All right.
And you're probably really, really good. I'll do it.
Hold the mic kind of close.
Okay. My name is Lee Hale, in case you haven't heard enough from the Hale family. I was going to tell a little bit about our trip, and I see it so differently than he did, although I really could not feel my posterior. But I have to tell us a tale on him. We, on another motorcycle trip, we traveled a lot with a little trailer that held all of our gear. And when you're on a motorcycle and you're camping and it rains, there's no place to go but your tent. Or someplace on the bike and say, the hell with it. Oh, excuse me, sorry, the heck with it. But this one night, we were the only ones in this campsite, and it was up in North Carolina, and one of our favorite places, Black Mountain Park. And I guess, I don't know. Okay, Black Mountain campground. And they said, don't worry, that there's a juvenile black bear that comes and rattles the trash cans, and then he goes off into the mountains. But every night he comes down and rattles the cans. Well, my husband's from Cleveland. He's very street minded. I'm not. I trust everybody until they hurt me. And I'm from the country, and nothing much bothers me about animals. So we were in this tent camped. He absolutely refused to have my cough drops, anything that could possibly make the bear come to our tent. I couldn't have Vicks, I couldn't have hand lotion, he made this list. So we had cleared all the stuff that he thought might, get the bear interested in us into the our trailer. We were in the tent. I put earplugs in because, well, you know who snores. So I put earplugs in. I beg your pardon. So he snores, and so I put earplugs in. So around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, he's like tapping me. Lee, wake up. And I said, what? You know, I'm sleeping here. And he goes, get your earplugs out. Listen. You hear the bear? And I said, well, yeah, he's rattling the trash cans like they said he would. Go back to sleep, just go back to sleep. He says, no, I'm really concerned. And so he gets the hatchet that was in the tent. And I said, what do you think you're going to do with that? Really. So he puts it down. He says, yeah, right, really, probably just really tick him off, right? So we're laying there, and the bear comes up. You could hear him through the leaves. It's in the fall in October. And you can hear him coming closer to the tent, and he's sniffing. You can hear him, and I'm just like, oh, my gosh. Well, And Ray's going, oh, and he's saying words that I haven't heard from him in a long time. And so I'm laying there trying to be calm. And I said, just take real deep, strong breaths and let it all out and relax. There's nothing we can do. It's the tent and us, and the tent and the bear. So the bear just sort of meanders around, and the sucker sits on the side of our tent and scratches like a dog, and the whole tent's going, wah, 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 wah. And he's like to have a cat, right? He's like freaking out. So we managed, the bear went off into the wood, and he's not calm yet. He took a long time, I'm sure, to get back to sleep. So the next morning, he says, we're moving out of this campground, blah, 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 blah. And I said, do you really want to take that tent down and put all that stuff back in? Do you really want to do that? Let's just stay. So I was thinking all day, and he was, I'm sure, about the bear coming back the next night. And all I could think of is, what could we do? What could we do to make him feel more secure? And I remembered a book that I read, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, Cry Wolf. Never Cry Wolf. And it was about this guy who was doing some sort of scientific work on mice, and he had this camp area, and the wolves kept coming in and getting the mice that he was working with. So the guy decided that wolves and animals such as they have perimeters in their own particular space, and they will relate to your space if you somehow make a line. So he urinated all the way around his campground, and the wolves respected that space. So I thought, man, this could work. So here we are in this campground in North Carolina, and I don't drink beer. I just don't like the taste of it, but I was drinking beer because I knew I had to all the way around this tent. And so here we are, waiting until at night, and I suggested this, and he says, "Do you think that would work?" I said, "Sure, that'll work." I had no idea, but we did. He went around that way, and I'm going like, oh, all the way around, you know, all around this campground, and laughing our butts off, and just cracking up, and drinking some more beer, and absolutely, you know, if anybody has seen us, oh my gosh. But anyway, have you ever done the duck waddle, trying to stop and walk? Women don't do that so well. So anyway, we did. So that night he woke me up. He goes, Lee, the bear's back, the bear's back. So I wake up and I pull my earplugs out and I go, yeah, he's coming. And you could hear him rattling around the trash cans. And then he came walking up into the area with the leaves rustling as he walked. And he gets to the area where we had urinated, and he went, oh, oh, oh. I didn't do it very well. I don't know how to make the noise that he made, but he woof, 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 you know, basically. And I thought, oh my gosh, what have I done? So he went all the way around our perimeter, huffing and woofing and sniffing, and then he went off into the woods. Amazing, right? So if you're ever in the woods, you know what to do.
Thanks so much. I'm glad we get two stories from the same trips. All right, so road trips tonight. Who would like to share their story about a road trip? Rick would like to point out that it sounds like no one else has left Gainesville before, so... If you'd like to prove him wrong, now is your chance. Road trips to Bradford County. We'll take it. All right, we've got a taker.
Hold it kind of close and introduce yourself.
Cool. Okay, so I'm Laurel, and I was thinking about like what story I was going to tell. I'm thinking, well, I don't really have any, you know, road trip stories because nothing's really ever happened on a road trip that would be interesting or exciting to share or different. But then I started thinking about the people that I was with on those road trips. And road trips are amazing because you get to really connect with people. You are stuck in a car for hours with the same people. If you can't entertain yourselves, you're done. You know, you have to connect with these people. You can't just be silent. So it's a really amazing way to just have some kind of human connection. And one road trip that came to mind was a few years ago, some friends and I, we just decided, you know what, we're going to go to Washington, D.C., and we're going to see Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert at this rally to restore sanity. Why not? You know, it was an amazing opportunity, and we just had this, you know, urge to go. And we did. We just packed up our things, got in a car, and left. And you know, we drove, I think it's like, 10 hours up there, and maybe 12, I have no idea. All the time kind of just went away, and, you know, I really got to know these people, and, you know, we all just kind of, like, shared one bed. So road trips can be intimate and addictive and just amazing. And also the people that you meet along the way too, or the people that you may meet accidentally, people that you wouldn't expect meeting. So when we were at this rally, like hundreds, maybe 1,000 people were there. I mean, like thousands of people were there on the National Mall, and immediately I ran into my uncle, my aunt, and my cousin. It was crazy, but it was like this weird fate that just kind of happened, and you just stumble, and they did the same thing. They packed up, and they just decided to go to Washington, D.C., so it's just amazing to me that all of these people on the National Mall on that day did exactly what we did. They just decided, we're going to go and gather together and connect with each other and be intimate and share something. So it was an amazing experience. That's all I have.
Thanks, Laurel. So I'll take this moment to thank Satchels for letting us host this here every month. In case you really enjoy your time here tonight, this happens on the second Tuesday of every month, so we'll be here again in May. But we've got to finish tonight first, so who is next up to tell their road trip story? Bill's got one. Give him a hand.
I keep thinking I've told this story before because it includes one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life, but maybe I haven't. When I was 19 in college, freshman year in college, I lived in a dormitory, and I got talked into going to Fort Lauderdale for spring break, about as cliched as you can get, and it was quite the sort of stereotypical experience you get down there. But I was in college in North Carolina, like I said. It was about a 15-hour drive down to Fort Lauderdale. This is, I guess, 85, so that was why Fort Lauderdale was still a hotspot for spring breakers. And it was a station wagon full of dudes, mostly 19, 20, 21-year-old dudes. And I went with my roommate, who was at the time one of my closest friends. And we were, you know, new college students. We'd been, 6 months into school, and we're still kind of wet behind the ears, and we get on this road trip going down to Fort Lauderdale, and we stay, you know, in the typical 7 or 8 dudes in one hotel room, just sort of doing what you do down there, frolicking for a week, and wearing ourselves out, you know, and we get through that week. Many, many sights were seen. One vivid one is standing in a upstairs bar called the Elbow Room, looking out over the street, watching all the cars and people streaming by back and forth, and these proud young Floridians in their truck that I think they meant to say Beaver Retriever on the side, but they spelled it Beaver Retriever. And you know, it just sort of sets the tone for the atmosphere down there. So, but the important thing is the ride back. We left, I don't know what time of day, but we knew it was 15 hours to get home. We'd been, you know, sleeping very little every night for the previous 6 or 7 nights. And we're just all just kind of zombies in this station wagon. And I was sleeping in what we used to call the way back, with my roommate in the back, and it was around dawn, so it was really dim light when we hear Steve, the driver up in front, say, "I think I'm going to get me some chicken." and I kind of was sort of half asleep and not really with it, but he said something else about chicken, and I kind of lift my head up above the seat, and I'm looking down the road in front of the car, and we're barreling down this 2-lane highway going, I don't know how fast, but fast, and there's a flock of chickens in the middle of the road. And Steve's not slowing down. In fact, he's speeding up. And we're bearing down on him pretty fast. And so I kind of nudge Mark next to me and said, "You got to see this." And he sticks his head up above it. And we're both saying, "I can't believe he's going to do this." And all the chickens finally figure out what's going on. They start running, okay, out of the road. But the very last one didn't quite make it. And it leaped in the air as it was trying to get out of the road. And this is literally what happened. I couldn't believe it. It clipped the right front headlight side of the vehicle and immediately started flipping head over heels over the car. And we turned around as quick as we could to see what was happening. And it was just like Foghorn Leghorn in the cartoons. It was an explosion of feathers in the air and a naked chicken on the ground. And the thing started running and doing cartwheels to escape. And it was, like I said, the funniest thing I've ever seen. My roommate and I literally laughed, howling laughter for like 10 minutes. And we still talk about it today. So that's all I got to say.
Thanks, Bill. Did the chicken make it? He doesn't know. So, road trips, I would love to hear your stories. All right, Jordan's got one.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jordan, the bartender. All right. So there's a couple road trips. I mean, I think road trips are great because everybody's had one, or they should if they haven't yet. And this was the last family vacation that, like, my immediate nuclear family had before my sister went off to college. And we were visiting my aunt and her husband in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we flew there and we took a road trip with them. And before I get into any more details, like, I need to set the cast of characters up. There's my sister who's 4 years older than me. She's 18. She's getting ready to go to college. And I haven't seen her in like 5 years because she's been on the phone in her room the whole time. But she's cool. She's an older sister and she's cool. She's an artist. And like, I like her. We get along pretty well, and that's positive. And then there's my mom, who has three other sisters. She's the oldest of three sisters. And they're all exactly alike. They're all from New York. And they all really like to talk a lot with the hands and talk a lot like this. And they, oh, isn't that so cute? Oh, over the hand, this is pretty here and whatever. We're talking about stuff all the time like that. All the time. And so when they get together, it's like a flock of birds that are just chatting away. They're really, you know, I mean, I love my mother, of course, and this, I'll just lay that down too. I love my whole family, so it's important to remember that. for me too as well. And this is my dad who, you know, he's a dad. He's a funny guy. But for the purposes of this story, really, like, he used to be kind of a hippie, and then he went into the Marines, and so he learned a little discipline. It was good for him, I think. But he straightened up quite a bit too. And since he's my dad, he had to show that he was the upright citizen in front of me, which was the perfect angle for my uncle, my mom's sister's husband, so he's an uncle through marriage. He had the perfect opportunity to be the cool uncle, and he told me about Pink Floyd and like showed me The Wall for the first time, and so he was really, always say he used to be in a band. Well, he wasn't in the band, but he did the lights. Like, his brother's band was cool enough that they had their own light guy, and that was him, and he did the light show. And so we go to Albuquerque to visit them, and then we take this drive to the Grand Canyon, and it's great. My aunt is like 6 or 7 months pregnant, and so we can't walk very much. We can't go down into, we go a little bit, we go maybe a quarter of the way down walking down into the Grand Canyon. That's a little scary. My dad, here's another important point I'm going to bring up now, is that my dad is afraid of heights. It's one of the few weaknesses that I've ever really known about my dad at this point in time anyway. And And he didn't like heights. He didn't like people. Other people he likes to be around heights. Like, this is, you know. And so if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon walking down it, it's fairly narrow. And occasionally, people riding mules will have to pass you. And it's like you have to stand up really close to the edge and let these mules go by. And it's kind of scary. But, you know, we went down and we came up. No mules had to go by us. We watched it happen. And that was enough to make my dad a little nervous. And I, at one point, I climbed underneath the railings they had at the time. Anyway, they were just like wooden picket fences. Like, you know, a kid of my age, I was 16. Man, I could go right underneath them or jump over them like they were nothing. And so I jumped over them. I went out on this ledge, and I was safe. I knew I was safe. I got on my belly and I crawled out to. I like wallowed out to the edge to look down and over and down into the Grand Canyon. And my parents are like over here, and they finally catch me, and they're freaking it. They're like, oh, God, no, get out of there. My dad starts yelling at me, you know, and I get back. I'm like, okay, whoa, it's fine. I'm laying on my belly. I'm not going to fall, right? And then I get to where they are, and I can see how incredibly undercut that ledge was that I was on, and I was like, ooh, okay, that was probably not a good idea. So it was the Grand Canyon. It was really fun. And then from there, we went into Colorado to this little town called Ouray. They called it Little Switzerland. And it was this cute little quaint place, and of course, my mom and my sister, or my mom and my aunt, her sister, are in the front seats of this minivan that we've rented, and we're driving, and they're talking about, oh, it's so cute. They do the little windows, like the all the stained glasses in there and everything, and there's little birds around and whatever. This is a little hot tub we can go to at the hotel, and you know, they're chit-chatting away, and we're on this mountain road going through some of the, like, the highest parts of the Grand of the, you know, the Colorado Rockies that you can go through in a car, you know. I mean, and there's oftentimes there's not guardrails, and there's this hairpin turn we're coming to, and you can see, you know, where the road turns ahead of you, and you can see the slope, and you can see where you're going to be, and downslope from where you're going to be in a few, you know, in like a mile, there's this car that's just covered in stones and rocks, and it's just been, you know, and it's just, you know, there it is, and my aunt is going like this. Oh yeah, this is great. Oh, all right, yeah. Oh, look at over there. You know, like this. And my dad is just white knuckled in the back seat. His eyes are huge, and you know, it's the heights, and he's not driving. And look at what she. And he's just back there, like, not even moving, just holding on. And you know, this is like, and I'm just like, okay, I need to be scared because my dad's freaking out, and he's my dad, you know. So like, he knows what's right and wrong, and he's a tough guy. And I was like, oh man. So I started getting scared too, and I thought maybe if I eased my way over to the edge of the car, away from the ledge, that would help counterbalance. We wouldn't tip over. That was all I could do, really. And we made it safely, of course. We're all here. And then the last little fun part of this road trip was when my cool uncle comes in. Beautiful little place we stayed at. There were these hot springs that came down the mountain, and they came into these big wooden tubs, and you could sit in these wooden tubs and soak in the hot tub. It was awesome. I don't know how my parents found this place. There's no real internet yet. Like, at least they didn't use it anyway. But they found it somehow. And anyway, so there we are. Like, the whole family gets in, and we're hanging out, and we're having a good time. And you know, my parents leave, and me and my uncle and my sister are like, well, we're gonna hang out a little bit. We're talking. He's talking about his band and the lights and whatever. And he pulls out a little joint after my parents have left. And we're like, ooh. And he's like, yeah. And it's so clear. The stars around. And we have ourselves a good time. We start talking. We start laughing. We start carrying on like it's, you know, it's just having a good old, I don't know how long. We're out a couple hours or whatever. I don't even know. We come back in, and we're still laughing going up the stairs, you know, because by this point, you know, it's gone, and we're happy, and we open the door, and there's my mom and my aunt with the same identical disapproving glares looking right at us. And they're like, you know, the window was open. We could hear everything you said. And the three of us just fall on the floor laughing. Like, we cannot, you know, like, the two of them there just looking, just the same. We just fell on the floor laughing, and it diffused it entirely. My dad's like, oh, it's all right. It's not a big deal, you know. He'd have done the same thing, you know, if the kids weren't around. And so anyway, it was just like the best last family vacation we could have had. It was really cool. Thanks.
Thanks, Jordan. So Grow Radio and The Conk both have Facebook pages. Check them out. Grow Radio also has a Twitter, if you tweet. And on that note, we need another road trip story. How about we have the... We got one? Yay! Give her a hand.
Never done this before.
That's okay. Hold the microphone kind of close and introduce yourself.
Okay. So my name is Lizette, and I am the mother of Leela and Tom, and the grandmother of Molly Rose. And my road trip story is... that I've been to Ure, and I don't... Yeah, I've been to Ure. Cool. It's exactly as you described it. It's fantastic. And the thing about Ure is that what you described as driving along an edge, it's like, it's not just an edge. It's not a road. It's rocks. And it's like rocks that go like this, and then you're here, and the thing goes down 1,000 feet. It's immensely... completely terrifying. So, and you're driving in this little car, and there's only one way to go, except that cars are coming towards you, like buses of people are coming towards you. And you have to somehow figure out between the bus and the driver how to get around each other on this little bitty, like 4-foot-wide thing that drops rocks 1,000 feet down. So I'm going to back up now and time lapse to like 10 years earlier, where I started to have this fantasy. I was born in France, and I came here when I was 5 years old, and I'm a nice Jewish girl from the Bronx. But I came out here, and my fantasy was that I would meet somebody from France, that we would meet, me and my husband Jean would meet somebody from France, and we would become great friends, and they would invite us to France, to their small little tiny village, and we'd have this wonderful opportunity to visit a really rural village in France with some real French people. And that was my fantasy. And not only that, they would invite us to their wedding. It would be like a whole village wedding. So, all right, so set that up, okay. Then we go to Ure, and we're driving along this road. And we went to this wonderful little bed and breakfast with all the hot tubs and everything. And it's really cute. It's super cute. It's so cute that you just can't believe how cute it is. And it's communal eating, so there's this gigantic table, so everybody has to sit around the same table to eat. And these are all people I've never met Southerners before. I didn't understand, like, the Southern, you know, gentility yet. But these people were extremely nice and very polite and very, very conventional. And we're sitting at this very long table, don't know anybody. And all of a sudden, in walks these two people wearing all black. All black. Very hip-looking people. And she was wearing a beautiful handmade pearl necklace. And he was this really tall, interesting-looking guy. And I thought, I really would like to meet these people. And they took seats at the end... one, you know, both ends of the table, and they were far apart at the end of this long table, and nobody knew anybody. And I'm just looking at her, and I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking, wow, these people look so nice. And it turns out that these people had a car crash the night before, driving up one of these roads, and totaled their Jeep that they had rented, and everything that they had went right into the river that was running 1,000 feet down below the cliff there, and they had nothing. But the people that came out to rescue them took them and to the clothing store or camping store, and the only thing they could buy were fleece things that were black. So they were dressed in black because of that. And they didn't have a car. and we were driving up to take that drive to sightsee this beautiful, incredible canyon. And we passed them as they were walking because they were going to hike, because Europeans hike everywhere. So they were hiking. They were going to hike this long, gigantic hike. And we said, hey, you want to come with us? So they got in the car and they came with us. And turns out she's French. Okay, and he's American from California by way of someplace else. And she'd never had peanut butter before. So, of course, we had a lunch packed, and, of course, there were peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. What else do you pack? And so she tasted peanut butter for the first time, and she went like that. Thank you. Was interesting. She gave it back to us. but it turns out that we became friends with these really nice people, and lo and behold, they had a wedding. And she came from a little town in Limbach, which is the north of France near the German border in Alsace. And everybody knew everybody, and she knew everybody, and there was a 103-year-old lady who came to the wedding. And they invited us to their wedding in Limbach, in a small town where everybody knew each other. And we got to go to a wedding that I imagined 10 years earlier. So that's my road trip. Oh, even better. Wait, there's more. I love this part. As we were driving into Ouray, the town of Ouray, we believe in omens. And as we were driving in, a gigantic spotted red-tailed hawk came swooping over the car. I mean, like right in front of the windshield, and landed on the rocks over on the right. And I went, holy shit. This is something special. Something special is going to happen now. And so that was our omen, that this special thing was going to happen, and we would meet these people, and we're still friends with them. And we actually helped them pick out their house in Long Island, because they're both teachers out there. That was my story.
Thanks, Lizette. We've heard about some good road trips, and I imagine there are more good road trips that we haven't heard about yet. All right. Give our next storyteller a hand.
Yourself.
Pardon?
Hold the microphone kind of close and introduce yourself.
All right. Hello, everybody. I'm Dean Wiesjohn. And by the way, the pizza was very good. This is my little nephew over here. We took a road trip to Atlanta one time. We're big Cub fans. So we went up to... Yeah, it's been 109 years, we haven't won one, but we're due. It's a new year. We're only two games under 500 so far. We've played four. Anyway, we decided to go up and see the Cubs. He drives like a wild banshee. We're going about 90, 95 because we got about 4 hours to make Atlanta. He said, oh, that ain't no problem. So we're about three quarters of the way there. And everybody's hungry. Said, well, we got to stop. Well, we don't have time to stop. Keith says, I'll make up the time. Don't worry about it. So we pull over. It's just a little off-ramp, whatever, a street. And up comes this Mexican restaurant. Beautiful. It's out in the middle of nowhere. You know, it's like two filling stations and this big old castle. So... we all went inside, and one of our buddies, his name's Tom Stahlbaum, and he's, you got to know the guy to understand him. I mean, he's like half crazy, I think. But he's outside on the cell phone. You know, everybody's got cell phones now. I don't know if you know that. You can just stand there. There's no cord on them. You can be anywhere with this thing. I couldn't believe it. But anyway, here's Tom out there. Talking, And we're, I, Keith, and my partner, Jack, we're all sitting in there.
Business
and,
partner.
What's that?
Your business partner.
Yeah, my business partner. What else is there? But anyway, all of a sudden we hear all this noise. Going, what the heck is that? We look over there, there's a table, and we go, what are they doing, you know? And pretty soon a little guy comes up around and boom, nails a guy with a pie in the face. A pie in the face. So I'm going, what they do over there? And he goes, Mister, for $5, we throw pie in your face. I go, what do you mean? Oh, if it's his birthday, if it's a guy's birthday, for $5, we throw a pie in his face. So my friend Tom's still outside. We go, oh, okay. Keith gives the girl $5. And, I mean, this Mexican guy, I've seen midgets before, but he was half the size of that. So my friend's sitting in his chair like this, and he goes, all of a sudden, there's all this noise coming towards you. He goes, what's going on here? And he's just sitting there, and pretty soon, the guy comes right behind him. Tom's just like, what the hell? What's going on here? Happy birthday. I mean, all the way back, we were laughing so hard driving the car, we couldn't hardly make it. I mean, just, pie in the face. Anyway, it's about 20 miles before you get to Atlanta. It's well worth the money. Take a $5 bill.
Thank you.
I will keep that one in mind for future road trips that go by Atlanta. So road trips tonight. You've got one? Mitch has one.
Thank you. Hello. So this is a story about getting in a car accident in China with the Pink Panther lady. So a friend of mine, Michael Clater, I don't know if any of you have heard of him. Yeah, he's a local musician here. He and I, about 2 years ago, we traveled through China. Our goal was to start in Beijing and end in Chengdu, Sichuan. So it's basically going from the northeast to the southwest, where in the southwest we were going to meet up with a friend of him, his friend David, who he had played in bands with, who knew how to get shows in China. And our plan was basically just save up some money, travel, play some shows, make some money, because apparently these shows were lucrative, and then do some more traveling with the money we made. So anyways, we made it to Chengdu, met up with David, and so we're there for a while. We end up meeting this woman who, for the rest of forever, we will refer to as the Pink Panther Lady. And the reason we will refer to her that is because she heard us speaking English in a park, and she came to talk to us because she knew how to speak English, and she thought we were really cool, and told us all about how she was in a movie called The Pink Panther. And we thought it was a Steve Martin movie. It actually was this knockoff Pink Panther film. She showed us the script and everything. It looked very legit. She was a wonderful lady, and she knew a person who had a cafe, a friend of hers, and we were looking for shows at the time. We had a few leads, but you know, we hadn't booked anything yet, and so this was like, oh, great, somebody who's going to give us a show. And so she told us, meet her at her apartment, and then she will drive us to the place. So, I mean, we were taking anything at this point because we were getting really low on cash, and we needed a show. And so so we get to her house, and she puts us in this van with a friend of hers. And again, David speaks Chinese pretty fluently. Michael, he knows enough to get around. I know nothing. I know towards the end, I knew enough to get to a bus stop or a train station and kind of whittle my way through, you know, getting to where I needed to go. But anyways, so it's me, Michael, and David, Pink Panther Lady, her friend, who is a photographer, and then the driver. So we're all in this van. We have a vague idea of where we're going, and if you've ever been to China, there aren't really traffic laws. I don't know how else to put that. It's just there are lines in the road. Some of them, you know, are solid lines. Some are dotted lines. I don't know what any of them mean because nobody seems to follow them. There's passing. I mean, oncoming traffic doesn't matter. If somebody's going too slow, you go around them. And this, apparently, this was the first car ride I had been in that wasn't a taxi. With total strangers, and I can try and describe for you how the accident occurred. We were basically driving on a road and changing lanes, and the driver, who had no knowledge of blind spots, it seemed to me, because he wouldn't really look. Nobody wore seatbelts either. In fact, a lot of people think that it's bad luck to wear a seatbelt because that means that you don't have any faith in the driver. That's what we were told. So like a lot of the taxi drivers would say, you don't need your seatbelt. I'm a great driver, is basically what their response translated to. And they're like, don't put your seatbelt on. It's cool. I'm really good. And this guy was the same way. So David, Michael, and I, we had our seatbelts on. Nobody else did. So basically what happened is he's going, and he changes lanes. I'm assuming he looked in a mirror, but anyways, somebody came up pretty swiftly behind him, and he ended up clipping the back. He hit his tail light, and so both of our headlight and his tail light went out. And it wasn't enough to really, it caused damage, but not, you know, it was a slight fender bender. We weren't going fast enough to be really any damage. But here's three Americans in a car with a woman and two men who we have really no idea who any of them are. And we just got in a car accident in China to a show for which we don't really have work visas. We're on, you know, so we have no idea what's going to happen. We're basically, you know, like, okay, we just got in a car accident. Let's see what happens. And so everybody gets out of the car, and through David's translation, what he's saying is that the Pink Panther woman is arguing that he was going too fast, and he's apparently arguing that they weren't looking where they were going, which, from my perspective, that seemed to be, you know, we were clearly at fault. We clearly went into their lane without looking and hit the man. So anyways, we're talking. We're basically the three of us discussing what we should do. And the driver of the other car and the driver of this, they're talking. And, you know, it's pretty calm, to be honest. I mean, it's the driver who got hit. He seems a little frustrated, but, you know, there's no... The other thing, I never saw any road rage or any kind of aggression when I was in China. That was the one thing where it's like, I never saw anyone mad. There was one instance where two scooters hit each other, and they seemed pretty aggravated. But that was really the extent of aggression in China for me. And this was, you know, the same. They just didn't seem that upset about it. And as any incident that I ever saw in China, there was a large group of people that started to accumulate, and people would talk. And meanwhile, the three of us are just there, kind of like talking about, oh my goodness, what's going on? And as they're coming back to eventually tell us, like, it's fine, we're just going to keep going, nobody's car is broken, so it's fine, and then they're going to, I guess, figure it out later. I'm assuming there are numbers exchanged or something. David gets a phone call from one of his contacts saying, hey, we got three shows, so we're set, it's going to be great. And so we're high-fiving, and at that point, I just imagine, like, people on the road passing us, seeing these three. My friend Michael Clayton, if you've ever seen him, he has this large red beard at the time. I have a fairly good-sized beard going on, and then David, who's this blue-eyed, blonde-haired kid. We're all high-fiving and, you know, looking really happy next to a car accident under an underpass in this road. I envy the people driving by and wondering what's going on. So that's getting in a car accident in China.
Thanks, Mitch. So road trips. All right, we've got a storyteller.
Hold
it kind of close and introduce yourself.
Okay, thank you. So my name is James. Never publicly spoke, so first time telling a story. Thank you. So a little backstory: met this girl Andrea. If you guys have ever gone to the UF, donate your clothes, panty run, I guess is what it is, underwear run. Met this girl Andrea. Totally fell in love with her the first sight, but didn't see her for a couple years. Moved to Atlanta, came back, worked at Dunkin' Donuts, bumped into her again. After about 4 or 5 months of working with her, we started talking again, and she invited me out to go to Ultrafest in Miami. Super stoked, beautiful girl asking me to go to Miami for no money, had a good car, so we went down. It's a pretty good trip. Of course, we didn't plan anything, where to stay. We just had tickets and some money. We get there, we find the seediest hotel, of course. Proceed to stay there and didn't realize I was in Little Haiti. She asked me, I had to go grab some feminine supplies. So barely knowing this girl, I walk out into a place where no one was speaking any English, and I walked for about like half a mile down to this Chevron, and finally after talking to about 5 people, I just resorted to sign language. Just didn't know what to do. I was like, look, I need something for there. Can you please help me? He finally picks up 2 boxes, and I say, that one. Grabbed it, got back to the hotel. Job okay. We proceeded to party at Ultrafest in Miami, had a lot of fun, and then started the drive back to Gainesville. Well, it got a little hairy because out of nowhere, it was just big thunderstorm. And I was driving my car I just finished paying off. Of course, I didn't put any new tires on it. And we're proceeding to drive down this torrential rain environment. And as we get close to Gainesville, you know, we had built some memories up. We were really connecting. And she tells me about a time she had hydroplaned, wrecked her car, wrapped around a tree, was in the hospital for a number of months. No sooner did she finish that story, I proceeded to hydroplane. I turned to her very, very calmly, I guess, saying, well, it just happened. She proceeded to look at me like, no. And then that's when she tipped the wheel and we proceeded to spin out. And as we were doing that, I managed to clip a concrete barrier and somehow not destroy my car throughout this. We're both shaking. She turns to me and says, can we just get off the road? I was like, oh, yeah. I just wrecked my car. Yeah, let's do that. Pull over into the gas station. And as we're just sitting there talking, she finally turned to me and said, James, after that event, I think you're the one. We should date. And at that moment, I'm like, yeah, to her, I probably look like Speed Racer or something, just careening down rain. No, I was terrified. First car accident, hopefully only one. And we proceeded to date for 1.5 years, and it was a really great year. I guess that's my road trip story. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing with us. So road trips tonight.
Yeah.
right. Hold it kind of close and introduce yourself.
All right. Wow. What an audience. My name is Noel. I actually came here tonight to write an article about the conch for a local website called GainesvilleObserve.com, and now I'm getting kind of caught up in the storytelling aspect of it, so I can make something up. Actually, this story goes back to my childhood. I was 10 years old, the youngest of 8 kids in a family that grew up in Connecticut, and I grew up a New York Yankees fan. And because we lived right about halfway between Boston and New York, and so half the town was Boston, half the town was New York Yankees. But anyway, me and my brother, Jimmy, used to deliver a newspaper called the Rockville Reminder. This is a weekly ad sheet that came out with all the school menus and all the local little stuff that doesn't really make much of a difference. But the nice way they rewarded us at the end of the year was by giving us a trip to Boston to watch the Red Sox at Fenway Park. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever been to Fenway Park, but it is the, even to a 10-year-old kid, it is a dream come true. And that night, on a Friday night, on June 22nd, 1969, they were playing the New York Yankees. So this was my dream come true. And nothing could go better than in the top of the first inning, when the Yankees' first batter, Horace Clark, got a base hit. Then their second batter, Roy White, I think he drew a walk. Then the third batter, Bobby Mercer, who was very young in his career after replacing Mickey Mantle, he somehow got on base. I think it was another base hit or something. But anyway, the bases were loaded for none other than Joe Pepitone. How many of you remember who Joe Pepitone is? Anyway, he must have been pretty good because he was a Yankees cleanup hitter, but in 1969 the Yankees weren't very good. But anyway, Joe gets up there and I think it was on a two-strike pitch. He hits a home run over the center field fence, a grand slam. My New York Yankees are leading the Boston Red Sox 4-0, and they haven't even made an out yet. And I'm thinking, I have gone to heaven, and it is called Fenway Park. Well, then I heard some thunder. And before the Red Sox could even get up to bat, in the bottom of the first inning, it poured like hell. And that game was rained out. Joe Pepitone's grand slam was wiped off the books, and that was the longest 90-minute drive back to my hometown in Connecticut that a young boy could ever imagine. But, you know, the person who organized the trip said, but don't worry, because we're going to give you a rain check, and we're going to allow you to come back here in a few weeks. Except that my family moved to Florida 5 days later. And so I said goodbye to Fenway Park. But there's a happy ending to this story, which is really weird, because I went to journalism school here at UF. I was a sports editor of the Alligator for a little while. And then I went on to a career in with the Tampa Tribune and the Tampa Bay Times and a few other newspapers. And I was actually able to write sports, but mainly I edited sports. Well, I moved to Connecticut about 15 years ago, and the Tampa Tribune had asked me to write an article about Yankees old-timers game at Yankee Stadium. Old-timers day at Yankee Stadium. Can you imagine that? I mean, they wanted a feature story about Hector Lopez. He was appearing at Yankees old-timers game for the first time. He had replaced Mickey Mantle also in one of the 1960 World Series and hit a home run or two. But anyway, in the process of interviewing Hector Lopez in the Yankee clubhouse, I also wanted to interview Yogi Berra, which I thought was kind of difficult. But when I walked by him and tried to get his attention, he was talking to a lot of the beat reporters and other the big media of New York. But for some reason, he stopped and he said, I want to talk to this guy. And he was pointing to me. So anyway, I was able to ask Yogi Berra questions. I even went out into the dugout, the Yankee dugout. I just can't, you know, sometimes you look back at life and you just go, was I really in the Yankees dugout? But I was, and it was magical because there was Ralph Houk, who was the manager of the Yankees in 1969, and then there was Whitey Ford was nearby, Moose Scowron, all these great Yankee players, and then all of a sudden I see Joe Pepitone. Joe Pepitone. This is 2001. Let's see, this is almost over 30 years after the fact, and I'm thinking Joe Pepitone. I go up to him and I go, "This is a long shot, Mr. Pepitone, but do you remember in 1969 hitting a grand slam at Fenway Park in Boston against the Yankees and then having that game rained out?" And he looks at me in kind of like disbelief, like, "Of course I remember. I only hit 3 grand slams in my career, and one of them was taken away from me that night." So that's my story about Joe Pepitone and the Yankees. Thank you.
Thanks, Noel. So road trips tonight and the places they take you. All right.
Hold it kind of close and introduce yourself.
Yes, ma'am. My name's Ashley. My husband and my children are sitting over there, and my dad was the pie in the face story. And Keith is my small cousin. So, and Keith's mama, Sheila, is sitting back there, and our 2 friends that I just met. Anyway, this is a love story, and it starts in 1999 when I was a sophomore in high school, and I went on a trip, and it was a cow trip, because I grew up showing cattle, and my mom's an ag teacher, and so I used to travel around with the University of Florida's extension program and do Dairy Quiz Bowl. It's like Jeopardy, but for cows, kind of. So, if you want to ask me some questions about dairy, I could probably maybe come up with some information for you, like a gallon of milk weighs 8.64 pounds, or Jersey cows have the highest butter fat content in their milk. So, lots of trivia like that about dairy cattle. So, we went to Idaho that year, and Florida is a huge agricultural state, which a lot of people don't realize, but our dairy program was very poor, so they didn't pay for us to do a lot of the activities like all of the other states who send Dairy Quiz Bowl teams to Holstein Convention do. So we went to Idaho. They flew us out there that year because it was too long of a drive for us to drive one of the university vans, 16-passenger van with, you know, all of our junk and kids, and we'd hook up the buzzers in the car, and our Quiz Bowl coach would make us do the buzzers, and we'd be like driving through the mountains getting sick, and no, we got to study. We got to study. So anyway, we went to Idaho, and I met this boy in Idaho, and I thought, oh, he's pretty cute. And I was, mind you, 15 years old. Maybe I might not have had my, yeah, I didn't have my 16th birthday yet. It was in June of 1999. So we exchanged addresses. I think we wrote once. I don't know. And then 2 years goes by, and I went to the same conference in 2001, but this year it was in Iowa, not Idaho, not Ohio, not Illinois, not Indiana. Nobody knows where Iowa is, like kind of in the middle, a little bit north of, yeah, Iowa. So we went to Iowa. That time we did drive a van because it was within 24 hours of driving time. Somehow we ended up accidentally leaving 2 days early. So our coaches were like, oh, I guess we have to rent a hotel room tonight because Florida didn't pay for us to do the stuff because we're too poor. So they rented us an extra hotel room at like a cheap hotel the night before, and then we went and checked into the convention hotel, and my sister went with me that year, and we were going up the stairs because the elevator broke down in the hotel. So we were running up the stairs, and here comes this boy coming down the stairs, and I was like, oh, hey, you're Matt Boland from Iowa, aren't you? And he gets this like startled look on his face. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm Ashley Sorales from Florida, and I met you in 99 in Idaho. And I remembered, you know, we exchanged addresses or whatever. He's like, okay. So anyways, my sister and I run on up the stairs. We're going to our hotel room or whatever. And like, and I, well, I guess we kind of, he asked if we were going to the dance. And I was like, no, Florida didn't pay for us to go to the dance. We're too poor. So we run on up the stairs, and a couple of hours later, there's a knock on our hotel room door. And Matt Boland from Iowa's mother was on the organizing committee for the whole Steen Quiz Bowl convention for the juniors. So he comes up with a marker and marks all of the Florida girls' hands like they're marking them to get into the dance. And so we all get to go down to the dance with this cute boy from Iowa. And that night, we exchanged information again because, I don't know, we didn't have each other's information anymore. Because that was before texting and Facebook and stuff like that. It was literally like we wrote a letter to each other. And we went home from that conference and we chatted on AOL Instant Messenger. And then I think he made me change over to MSN Instant Messenger. And then he was like, oh, well, my fraternity's having a party. Do you want to come to the party? And I was like, oh, sure, I'll go to the party. So my girlfriend and I flew to Iowa. Actually, we flew into Minnesota. And the boy drove up and picked us up. And her mom was a flight attendant. So we flew on her buddy passes. And we started dating in October, on the 26th of October of 2001, which is the year I graduated from high school. And then we got married 2 years later, or a year 9 months later, and we're still married almost 11 years later. And we have two beautiful children, and we're in the process of adopting.
Thanks. Life-changing road trip that one was. All right, so we've still got time to hear your road trip story.
Tom Hart.
Does he have one?
All right.
Story.
No, it's we don't. I don't. I wrote a couple notes on my hand, and I know I'm not supposed to have done that. All right, goodbye. No, I honestly don't. We don't have a single story. We've taken a lot of road trips together.
Yeah, so, yeah. Except I can't drive yet, so you end up driving all the time. Because I grew up in New York,
this
driving thing is really foreign to me.
So in all the stories we'll tell, she's in the passenger seat, and I can't remember. All I remember is, like, anytime we take a road trip, we need to bring instant coffee.
Well, this is a trick I learned from my mom, which is always have a jar of instant espresso in your bag when you travel into the interior, because in a lot of places in the United States, the coffee's really bad. And this is why Tom ended up tearing off his clothes in a parking lot in Arkansas at 2 in the morning in fury. Which
I actually don't remember that part.
You tore your pants off and threw them at the car.
Were they wet? I don't remember.
No, you were so angry at how bad the coffee was.
And it would just strip?
Yes.
All I remember about that is we were trying desperately to get a cup of coffee, and we didn't have the instant coffee. And I was so angry that there was no good coffee, and that I went into a Barnes & Noble, and I stole a road map. And I was 38 years old, and I could have paid for it. I just said, something has to give. I'm taking this road map. And I walked out, and I was like... And then I guess I...
You were 35, but 30, anyway.
Okay. Yeah, it was the year of the rain. Okay.
That was the year that the Republican convention came to New York, so we left. And we went to the South. Because I insisted that we visit Tom's ancient grandfather, and in the middle of that, we also took a road trip from Memphis to New Orleans, and then New Orleans to Arkansas, or Missouri, wherever horrible place your grandparents were living at the time.
Be nice.
Sorry.
Be nice. So, but if you remember right, my grandfather took us on a road trip of sorts in and around Joplin, Missouri.
Yes, I do. He showed us every boarded up store and gleefully told us, well, this used to be something till the Walmart came in, but we like the Walmart.
But not only that on that trip, well, he also was like, this house over here, this is a multimillionaire lives here. He became a multimillionaire because he ran a lead paint factory. And I grew up eating lead paint, and I'm just fine. We all grew up eating lead paint. Didn't he say that?
He totally said that, right after he said that he didn't really see the point of Shakespeare.
That was true. And we still didn't have instant coffee at that point, and my grandmother made us really, really weak coffee. And what'd she say?
Oh, I don't know if you should drink this. This might put hair on your chest.
Anyway, I don't...
But we've taken a lot of road trips. And on that road trip, I burst into tears violently twice.
Why?
One, because What's Going On came on the radio, and it was during the Republican convention, and I was really angry, and I started crying really hard. Yeah. But I think you have better road trip stories than this.
Do I? Like what?
You've ridden the Green Tortoise twice.
Oh, those are, no. Those are too long, and they're, I had a seizure on my first trip to the Panhandle. I was like so desperate to see the white sand.
The story is rapidly going south. I'm sorry, everybody in the audience.
You know, the longest road trip I ever took was that 30-minute car ride in a snowstorm last month in Saratoga.
I don't have anything interesting to say about that except I wanted to kill the driver.
We flew into Saratoga, it was just like a month or two ago, in this huge, horrible snowstorm, and we had the little baby there who's like, I don't know, 3 months old and
five
at the time, and desperate to keep her safe. And this taxi driver is just like speeding along. We've got a 45-minute car. Anyway, it was just painful. It was the longest car ride of my life, for sure. I don't remember the other one, so do I just do that when I get mad?
That was really the only time. I've been waiting ever since.
I did. Stay tuned, Tia. Are we done here?
You're not telling any road trip stories about Morocco, so we probably are.
You know, there's no real stories about that except like in China and also in Egypt, they drive like maniacs there. And
yeah.
And getting into a cab, if you want to go from one town to another, you get into a cab with like five people in a car about the size of this, and then they just go until you're in the next town. And
in Cairo, I figured out that the way that you get through any road trip you have to take is to not look in the direction of whatever you're veering towards. So you might be on the highway from Cairo to Giza, and you just look over there. There's the pyramids. While the driver is doing God knows what, because even more so than China, I think, that road signs are just a suggestion. There's also these road signs that tell you what the different speed limits are for different types of vehicle, and these make absolutely no sense. And then there are signs that say no honking, which if you've ever been to Egypt is like, that makes no sense at all, because all people do is honk. It's just, hi, I'm here. Oh, I'm here too. Oh, I'm here too. Oh, I'm not going to crash into you. Yeah, but Morocco sounded like it was a little nicer.
Yeah, they're not as, I don't think they're as mean.
Well,
didn't you see in Egypt? That's what I asked if we're done. We're done here. Thank you for having us.
Don't be sorry. I thought it was great. Thanks, y'all. Is she going to remember that road trip story? Her first scary, snowy road trip. We've got time for about one more story. All right, Satchel's going to wrap it up for us.
Well, I might let Danny do. Danny said if I tell one, he'll tell one. So we might have two more. But if you need to leave during or after my story, that's fine. Because my story might be too long. I'm going to try to keep it short, but I tend to be verbose. I don't like standing in front of people. I'm trying to overcome this fear. I know. I was 23, and I'm 46, so this is half my life ago, 23 years ago. And it was 1991, and I was living in Jacksonville Beach and working at this little club called Einstein and Go-Go. That was an all-age club. And you'd go there since I was 16 and dance, and then Red Hot Chili Peppers and Firehose and all these great bands played, R.E.M. and this guy that worked there, Chuck, me and Chuck got to be friends, and so we decided we need to travel cross country. So I had a 64 Ford Fairlane, and I'd cut the top off of it, but it didn't have any top, and we're going to drive cross country in this car with no top. So we got together a little money. I don't know how much money, but we had a little bit of money. Somebody gave us a pack of Camels, which we were smoking, and then we take off, and we stop in Tallahassee. The first memory I have is really stopping in New Orleans, and I had never been really very far at that age, out of much Florida, Georgia kind of area, maybe Alabama. But we stop in New Orleans, and it was fun. I remember that night where there was like a street and there was a club, and there's this crazy guy comes up in this Chevy Nova and it's all spray painted and he has a top hat and his name is Marco Casanova and he's from Switzerland and he's got an accent, and we're talking to him, and then he's talking to these German girls with black leather jackets, and they seem real cute and they're talking German, and then we start talking to them, and there's two of them, Suli and Katrin, and they are traveling cross country by Greyhound bus, and they're going all the way to California, and we're going to California in our cool car. So they're about our age, you know, 19, 20, and we say, hey, y'all can come with us. And they're like, I don't know, you know, we don't even know you. And so we said, meet us tomorrow at this square, and we'll take you with us. You don't have to take the bus. So we go to meet them at the square, and they don't show up, and we're just kind of bummed. But we sit there for like 30 or 45 minutes anyway because we're hopeful, and they show up at the last minute. And we're like, cool, all right. So I was like, I kind of like Suli. He's like, I like Katrin. But we didn't tell them that. And so we get in the car. We're heading out of New Orleans, and a storm comes up. And it's all swampy and boggy on the sides of the road, and it starts pouring down, raining. And, you know, we hadn't been gone but for 45 minutes or an hour. And our car stalls out. It's an old car, and it stalls out. And all I have is a little Kmart pup tent that I had bought in the trunk. It's a little two-man triangle. And we said, well, let's just set up the pup tent. So we pull over on the side of the road, and we set up this pup tent, and we get inside of it. This is like our first introduction to these girls. All four of us pile inside this little pup tent that we had to set up in the rain because my car had stalled. And I said, it'll start back. It'll start back in about 15 minutes. And I remember Chuck had a jeans jacket, and it was just blood, like red everywhere. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, it's Guar blood from a Guar concert. It's not real blood. And somehow we set up in an ant bed. And so there were ants everywhere, but it was wet and soggy. So we wait about 20 or 30 minutes. The car starts up, and we get off of the next exit. And we take, you know, we had a Polaroid. We take a picture of ourselves. We all go into the bathroom, change clothes, and we're on our way. Well, later on, we would camp on the side of the road. We would sleep in the car just on the side of the road. I think the girls paid for a hotel room one night. We were trying to kind of like make moves, but they didn't have anything of it. There were these German girls, and they were like, uh-uh. We're like, all right. We get to Texas. We're in Austin, Texas, and we don't know where we're going to stay. We're walking with the girls, and we're like trying to talk to people at the bars, and they don't want to, you know, like, can we stay with you? And there's four of us. And we're walking down the street, and here comes Marco Casanova with his Dodge Dart driving by. And he sees us, and we wave. He goes, I got friends in Austin. Come with me. And so we all go, and we have a place to stay. Well, it turns out as we get to know Marco, he's traveling to Grateful Dead shows, selling Guatemalan stuff. And so he's got a trunk full of stuff he got from Guatemala, and his whole deal, he's going to Vegas where there's a Dead show. So we're going through Vegas too. Maybe we'll see you there. So after a couple days in Austin, we take off, and he takes off. we pull into Vegas, and we're walking, we park, and we're walking down the strip, and I swear to you, there's Marco Casanova again. He pulls by, we see him, he says, yeah, tomorrow's the Grateful Dead show. I don't care about the Grateful Dead, but he said, come on over there and, you know, hang out in the parking lot. So he had already knew how to talk to the girls in German. We were all friends. We had met in New Orleans, seen each other by chance in Austin. Here we are in Vegas. So we do go to this Ted show parking lot, and somehow these girls had started to get on our nerves. Now, we had been traveling for about 8 or 9 days. They weren't giving us no action, no kissing, no nothing. And we're like, come on. So they were kind of, and then they would start arguing in German, which was really annoying because we couldn't know what they were talking about. And we just, and we're like, these girls are driving us nuts. So somehow the girls got tickets to the Dead show. And I'm out there trying to help Marco sell Guatemalan stuff. And he's out there, and then me and Chuck are standing there, and the girls get a ticket, and they're inside the Dead show. And we're like, I think it's time to go to San Francisco. And we say, Marco, look, you'll take the girls to San Francisco, right? And he's like, yeah, yeah, no problem. So we just like, let's get out of here while the getting's good, because we were having fun, but they were kind of getting on our nerves. So he said, here's my friend in San Francisco, and we'll meet you there. So we go to San Francisco, and we get to San Francisco, and I had been gone for, I think, 2 weeks at this point. And I don't even think I had called home at all. Like, I had left, I'm 23, seeing the world, Mom. I might never come back. Like, I listened to way too much Tom Waits, and I thought, that's just what you did. You left, and you smoked, and you never came back. Well, so it had been 2 weeks, like an eternity. And I get to a payphone. We didn't have cell phones back then. And I call home, and my dad had died. And my dad had been sick my whole life. He had a brain tumor. He was kind of confined to a chair doing crossword puzzles my whole life. He was in and out of the VA hospital here in Gainesville. Like, he was always sick. But, and when I left, he was not doing that good. But it was nothing new. Well, 2 weeks goes by. I call home, and he has just died the night before. He had a blood clot, and a blood clot did end up being the cause, but he had a hole in his brain, and it was, air was getting to his brain, so they were trying to organize a surgery that was going to take like 2 days and 15 surgeons, and then the blood clot happened. And so I was just like, I actually remember just falling down crying on Haight-Ashbury Street at this payphone, just like, you know, just, he was 51, but you just never thought he would die. I mean, you're just so used to him being sick, you just don't think he's going to die. But he had lived actually a lot longer than he probably was supposed to with his condition. So I didn't know what to do. And, you know, obviously, I'm just going to come home. And so I didn't have much money. And my mom said, I'll, you know, help you. I'll get you a ticket. And I said, well, give me a round-trip ticket. And so I go home. I leave my car there with my friend and Sully and all them and Chuck. And I go home. And I attend this funeral. And I don't know, like, what I was thinking. But, you know, I'm home for a few days. And then I'm back in San Francisco. And, like, in retrospect, obviously, I should have gone home and stayed home, hung out with my mom and my sister, and, you know, that was it, and the trip was over. But for me, it wasn't over, so I had this round-trip ticket, and I get back to San Francisco, and I'm like, well, what the hell am I doing now? I don't have that much money. And then and they had been driving my car, and the brakes were shot, and the hills were like this in San Francisco, and I would come to the bottom of a hill, and I could not stop the car. I'm like, I'm going to kill somebody. I don't have enough money to fix these brakes. I call a junkyard, and they come meet me and give me $20 for my 64 Ford Fairlane. And Marco was like, I'm going to Guatemala. You can just come with me. The girls were going back. Chuck was like, I'm staying here. And so I got in the car with Marco, and we headed down to Mexico. And A couple things in Mexico I remember. One is we're laying on the beach until I was just blistered red, like no sunscreen, just about, you know, sun poisoning. And all the people there were so nice, and he knew some Spanish, and they would take us in and feed us, and it was really nice being in Mexico. But soon I realized when we got about halfway down that I didn't have any more money. And so I was able to get a train into Colorado, where I had a buddy of mine live. And when I got to Colorado, he kept going. I got a train to Colorado, and when I got off, I was broke. So I went and saw my friend and called home, and my mom bought me a Greyhound ticket back to Jacksonville, Florida. And so anyway, I ended up staying a few days in Colorado and getting a bus back to Jacksonville and working at a pizza place to save some money to pay my mom back for all that. But it was a fun road trip. The whole thing lasted a month, but it seemed like an eternity. Thank you.
Thanks, Satchel. Danny, you gonna finish it up for us? All right. Give Danny a hand, y'all.
All right, thank you. So I spent a lot of time on the road. I was in a band, and for about 14 years, we did like at least, you know, anywhere from 3 to 8 months a year on the road, traveling and touring. We got to play in 12 different countries, and it's been a real blast. And one time we were in Germany, and we pull up, and we played a lot of like squats and basement shows and youth centers and, you know, clubs and bars and stuff in Germany. And we're playing this youth center, and we got there, we decided, you know, we need to make some phone calls home, and this is back before, you know, we had all the cell phones and stuff, and everybody, we were still using these phone cards, and we would go to these pay phones and call home. So my drummer and I, we decided to go down to the gas station that they told us is at the corner, about half a mile, and use the payphone. And we were on tour at the time with this band from England. And what we usually do is, what a lot of bands do is, if you're from America, you meet up with a band from Europe and you fly over there and you get to use their equipment. You bring your own guitars, but you use their stuff. And then they come over to the U.S. at some point and they'll use your stuff, and, you know, you kind of trade that way. Well, as Spike, my drummer, and I were walking down the road, we hear this guy running up behind us, and he's like, "Danny, Spike, help, help." And I turn around, and it's the bass player for this band. And he's this gangly guy, and he's got this dreadlock mohawk. And he's like, "Help me, help me. The Nazis are after me." And we're like, you know, we think he's joking. We turn around, and we're like, "Yeah, it's funny." And I turn around, and there, you know, sure enough, there was this big, huge skinhead guy with a German Shepherd. And the German Shepherd that we saw over there, they're nothing like the German Shepherds we have here. These things look like wolves, and they're really big, and they're huge. So this German Shepherd, he's holding on to it, and he's holding on to my drummer, and, you know, he's, you know, wrestling with my drummer. And at some point, he starts shouting commands at this dog in German, and the dog is just, it's insane. It sounds like some crazy beast, you know. It's just coming after us, and we finally get the, you know, I get with Spike, and I say, "Let's, you know, let's go into this gas station and get away from this guy. This guy's crazy, you know. He's, you know, roughing up one of my buddies here," and we threw him against the wall. So we go into this gas station, and I tell him, you know, the guy behind the counter, I'm like, "Hey, man, is there a back door or something we can leave? This guy, crazy guy's out there." And he just kind of was like, "No, I don't know, you know, there's nothing." So we decide, okay, we're going to have to go out through the front door, you know, and this guy's out here with this crazy dog. But we look out there now, and he's on the other side of the street, standing up against the wall, and he's got the dog with him, and he's on the phone. And we're like, okay, he's calling his buddies. So if we're going to leave, we need to leave now before all his buddies get here. So we go inside, and I hatch this plan. I'm like, "All right, let's buy these big bottles of water." So they have these big, like, you don't get little plastic bottles of water over there. You get these big, huge glass bottles, and they're full of, like, bubbly water. So we each buy two of these big glass bottles of bubbly water. And I tell the guys, I take my hoodie off, and I wrap it around my arm. And I'm like, "All right, I'm going to let the dog bite my arm." And before I go on, I want to say that no animals were hurt in my story here, my little disclaimer. But we had been to Switzerland before that, and I bought a nice Swiss Army knife. And my plan was, I'm going to throw the bottle at the guy, let the dog bite my arm, and then stab the dog, I'm sorry, and then we were going to run. We were going to run. And so we walk outside. We each have two of these glass bottles. I look at the guy kind of sideways, like, you know, are you going to let us walk past? And he starts coming towards us. So I grab my bottle, and I throw it as hard as I can, where I actually, like, tore a rotator cuff because I threw it so hard. I throw it at his head, and it just nicks his head. You can hear it go bink on his head and smashes on this wall behind us. And this scares the dog enough where the dog just takes off running. But the look on the guy, on the skinhead, the Nazi's face, was just priceless. He was so freaked out by what had just happened, this bottle that splashed on this wall, on the wall behind him. And it scared him really bad to where he saw his dog running and he ran after his dog too. So, and that's pretty much the end of the story, but it's just something I always thinking about, what, like how tough the guy was when he had this crazy dog in front of him, and how he ran like a little, you know, chicken when he didn't have the dog anymore. He was just running after the dog.
Thanks, Danny. That's about it for tonight, y'all. This is a monthly event, so we will be here the second Tuesday of May, which I believe is the 13th, 7 to 9. The podcast for this show will be posted on Grow Radio's website in a couple of days, growradio.org. Thanks again to Satchels for letting us host this here, and have a wonderful night. Hope to see you next month.